cara.
Radio Borders Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to the sound of universal compassion. We will continue listen to Tenzin's previous program with the book Way of Life by Shanti Davies. Please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3 or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello, and thank you for joining us today for Dharma Radio, where we've been talking about how to counteract the forces of anger and to develop patience. There's a lovely quote from Linda Hogan, Chicktaw Indian writer, who is much involved with environmental issues in America, which goes, "There's a way that nature speaks, that land speaks. Most of the time, we're simply not patient enough, quiet enough, to pay attention to the story." Isn't that so true for much of our time? We're always in a rush to get somewhere, to do something, and never give ourselves the chance just to be quiet and listen with an open mind. But it's not only true about listening to nature's story, the land story, it's also true about listening to what others are saying to us. And so often, it is true about what we are trying to tell ourselves. We just don't take the time to stop, breathe, and listen. Although this program is about short-circuiting anger and developing patience, it is also about how to give ourselves the time not to react with our usual unthinking, rushed, habitual patterns, and to allow ourselves the time to react with more calm rationality based on a wider, more compassionate view. To give ourselves the time to look at a situation holistically instead of just focusing on the one small part that affects us directly and reacting to that as though it's the whole story. Although it hasn't got anything to do with patience and anger, I'm reminded of a story about Prince Siddhartha before he was the Buddha, when he was a young boy and his parents took him to a harvest festival. The sun was shining in a clear blue sky, and the prince sat in the shade of a large tree to watch what was going on. At first he was very happy. It was a beautiful day. The farmers were steadily ploughing the fields, birds were flying around, chirping merrily, and everything seemed very pleasant. But then, as he looked more intently, he noticed how the men pushing the ploughs were sweating and straining in the heat. The oxen were forced to go up and down the fields, up and down, pulling the heavy plough without a break under the hot sun. He saw that the birds were following the farmers, eating the worms and insects turned up by the ploughs. He also saw how snakes in the field were ready to strike at any bird that came close, but they themselves were in danger of being killed or maimed by the farmers or the ploughshares. The boy saw that what at first appeared to him as a pleasant summer scene was actually filled with toil and suffering for so many creatures that a great well of sadness and compassion arose in him. And so it is with us when we are involved in a troublesome situation in which anger easily arises. We're quick to judge on the evidence which appears immediately to our senses. But if we slow down, delay our reaction, and look more closely, often we will see that there's so much more to the situation than is immediately apparent. And so our whole reaction changes, usually with more compassion and less anger. So this is what the text we are following, Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, is teaching. It shows us how we can think, how we can see a situation to minimize the chances of anger overtaking us and ruining both ourselves and those around us. But now, before we go on with the text, let's take a moment to examine our motivation for being part of this program. As I've said before, motivation is the most important part of an action and determines whether the action is positive or negative. If we want a positive result from an action, we must have a positive motivation, otherwise only suffering will result. So, to make this program worthwhile, let us set our motivation to be as positive as possible. From a Buddhist point of view, that is so it's a cause for our enlightenment, so we can be the greatest possible benefit to others. Please try for that motivation, but if it's too great, at least think that this program will help you become an arhat, one who's enlightened for himself. Thank you. Now, last week, Shantideva, arguing against our getting angry with people that harm us, said that beings are so caught up in their delusions that we should not expect them not to harm us. The delusions are so strong that beings harm themselves up to the point of suicide, even though they have great attachment to their bodies. The obvious example we used last week was suicide bombers who destroy themselves in the mistaken belief that killing their enemies will result in some kind of paradise for themselves. If beings have such delusions, how can we expect them not to harm others? And seeing this, if we can't develop any compassion for them, at least we should not do anything to harm them, as they are like insane people. And most people would not want to harm those they know to be insane, even though the insane people may be creating harmful actions. Shantideva goes on to say that if people are by nature angry, then we just have to accept it, as we can do nothing to change them. But if they are only occasionally harmful in certain circumstances, it would be as foolish to be angry with them as it would be to be irritated by the sky because it has clouds passing through it. Then Shantideva takes the example of someone harming us with a weapon and points out, first of all, that we get angry with a person, although it's actually the weapon that is harming us. To the objection that it is the person who wields the weapon, Shantideva replies that the person is under the influence of anger, so actually anger is wielding the person. So we shouldn't get upset with a person, we must regard the anger as our enemy. Secondly, he says we have to remember that if we had not created the karma to be attacked, the attack would never have happened. So we are at least partly to blame for the harm that comes against us. The verse we finished off with last week states, "Both the weapon and my body are the causes of my suffering. Since he gave rise to the weapon and I to the body, with whom should I be angry?" Which means that we took on this body through our negative karma and so created the conditions for the harm which is afflicted on us. If we had not created that karma, or the karma to be attacked, even though the enemy with the weapon was ready and waiting, he or she would never have got the opportunity to use the weapon against us. So how can we say unequivocally that we are the innocent party? Pema Chodron takes the word weapons in the context of verbal abuse. "The words and actions of others can wound us as much as any weapon," she writes. "The meaning of this verse is that both their words and my reactivity are equally responsible for my pain. A remark that provokes me may not affect you at all. We all have to work on our side of the equation. We can't stop others from saying mean words, but we can work on developing patience. We can work on relaxing with the restlessness of our energy by remaining like a log and not retaliating." In the next verse, Shantideva continues with the theme. He says, "If in blind attachment I cling to the suffering abscess of a human form, which cannot bear to be touched, with whom should I be angry when it is hurt?" Here he points out that all that is wrong with taking this human body. Some people think this human body is truly a wonderful thing. And it is true, it is an instrument to create many fascinating things and situations. However, if we put aside our fantasies about it and really look at it, we will come to see that it's not really the wondrous thing we are so enamored of. Shantideva says it's like a running sore, and we all know what that's like. Take a blister, for instance. Even the slightest touch makes us cringe with pain. And our body is like that. What happens when someone you don't really like comes up and pats you on the back? Isn't there an immediate sense of unease and withdrawal? You know, you have incidents in your life which are really minor, but which stick in your mind ever afterwards. I had one such incident when I was a teenager and had gone somewhere with my parents where there were a lot of people I didn't know. I cannot remember where it was or what the occasion was, but I do remember one rather pretty girl sitting some way away from me. Because it was a room of strangers, I didn't have much to say and sat just a little dumbfounded and looked around. I glanced occasionally at the girl, merely in the course of trying to be interested in what was going on. But when we all got up to leave, she launched a tirade at me about staring at her. I was completely taken aback and stunned into silence, which probably made the other people believe I had been staring at her. But I had no intention of gazing at her in particular at all, pretty girl or not. It's like that often with us, isn't it? We're so sensitive about ourselves, and particularly our bodies, that even something that quite unintentionally intrudes on our space or touches our body sets us off. And so Shanti Deva says that if we are so very attached to something that is actually just a bag of nerves waiting to be hurt, why should we react with anger when it is harmed? This human body is formed from negative karma and afflictive emotion, and so inevitably it will suffer. By its very nature, it is prone to misery and dissatisfaction. Instead of recognizing this and wanting to be free of the body, we cling to it as if it were our most precious possession. But it is always getting us into difficult situations, and we suffer from being so ignorantly attached to something that is a byproduct of negativity and cannot help but be in the way of suffering. It is the fault of the childish that they are hurt, for although they do not wish to suffer, they are greatly attached to its causes. So why should they be angry with others, says Shantideva. Our major problem is that we don't want suffering, but we have no idea what its real causes are, so we continually create those very causes. What are the causes? In particular, the 10 non-virtuous actions motivated by afflictive emotion and karma. Those are killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, slander, harsh words and gossip, wrong views, ill will, and covetousness. For instance, we don't want to suffer, but we have no compunction at all about going fishing and making other beings suffer enormously. How can we possibly think that the result of an action motivated by attachment that deprives another being of their most precious possession, their life, will bring us happiness in the long term? For a very short time, we may get some happiness by eating the flesh of the fish, but the actions of intentionally going out to catch a fish, then catching and eating it, and rejoicing in doing so, makes for a complete killing karma that will mean a life of intense misery for us in the future. And so we cannot blame our suffering on other beings who are only really the conditions which make the karma ripen. We have to blame ourselves and our selfish, harmful way of acting. In his commentary to this text, His Holiness uses the Gulf War as an example. Everyone blamed Saddam Hussein for the invasion of Kuwait and the subsequent problems in Iraq. But His Holiness asks, where did Saddam Hussein get his military hardware from in the first place? Many factors involving many nations came together to allow Saddam Hussein to do what he did. So each of those nations should shoulder some of the responsibility. But we tend to focus our blame on one factor in an effort to exonerate ourselves from responsibility. So what does this say about New Zealand and the way that we treat animals, like farm animals and chickens, particularly in batteries? I remember going to a retreat in Nelson some time back at a centre out in the rural area of Sunshine Valley. Next door was a dairy farmer, and every evening we were treated to the young calves, perhaps not yet properly weaned, but who'd been separated from their mothers, crying out, and the distraught mothers plaintively calling back. And we knew that if the calves were male, they were destined for the slaughterhouse before they were even teenagers. Now how can we expect to have good conditions and happiness in the future if we create such negativity for the sake of our selfish desires for milk and meat. How sad it is, says Pema Chodron, that we, like children who don't know any better, continue doing the very things that cause us suffering. Moreover, we love those causes, the addictions, the gossip, the overwork, the feeding of our critical mind. Why don't we get angry with ourselves rather than blaming others? Or in our Western culture, we're so prone to self-criticism, it might be better to ask, why don't we have some compassion for our situation? His Holiness also uses the example of the Chinese invading Tibet. He says many factors contributed to the situation, not only China. In previous generations, Tibetans were warlike and rough people, so how can they not expect to reap the results of that? In every situation, we are also responsible for the unfolding of events, so can't just sit back and blame others when things get tough. But that's what is easiest to do, isn't it? We don't want to acknowledge our own responsibility, so we conveniently try to sidestep our part in it. But Shantideva challenges that, saying, just like the guardians of the hell worlds and the forest of razor-sharp leaves, so is this suffering produced by my actions. With whom, therefore, should I be angry? The causes for all our suffering is the negative karma we've created, from the thief who steals $5 from our wallet to the guardians of hell. If we hadn't created the karma to have the experience, we would not reap the suffering. So, in this sense, our suffering is not due to the thief or the hellish demon. It is our own self-obsessed mind that creates harm and thinks it can get away with it. And in any case, as Pema Chodron points out, the hellish situations we experience are just projections of our own minds. For the most part, our pain is self-inflicted. Once we really recognize this, she says, we might find the motivation to stop creating torments for ourselves. Shantideva goes on, having been instigated by my own actions, those who cause me harm come into being. If by these actions they should fall into hell, surely isn't it I who am destroying them? So now he shows us that although it appears that my enemies cause me harm, it is actually the negative karma from my own previous harmful actions that allows them to do so. And as a result of their actions, they will experience suffering in a future life. So really, they are not harming me, I am harming them. Pema Chodron also points out that those who harm us are strengthening their own negative habits and so creating the causes for future misery. Although we are not responsible for the way they act and so shouldn't feel guilty, we are unintentionally the cause of their pain. Similarly, the way that we react to others now, especially those who harm us, determines our experiences in the future. So we have a choice. Either we react with habitual resentment and harm, or with understanding and empathy. Pema Chodron says, we can either widen the gap between ourselves and others, or we can lessen it. And which would you rather do? Shantideva continues, in dependence upon them, I purify many evils by patiently accepting the harms that they cause. But in dependence on me, they will fall into hellish pain for a very long time. So since I am causing harm to them and they are benefiting me, why, unruly mind, do you become angry in such a mistaken manner? When someone is angry with us, we think they are our tormentors. But actually, it is the other way around. We are the tormentor and they are the tormented. That person who is irritating us is giving us a good opportunity to practice patience. And if we take that opportunity, they are benefiting us a great deal. Often in Tibetan Buddhism, it is said that your enemy is actually your greatest friend. And if you think about it, our friends give us very little opportunity to practice patience. Usually our friends are very nice to us. They are understanding and back us up when we get into difficult situations. Only our enemies give us the chance to really practice patience. If we are wise, we will gladly take that opportunity and use it to our advantage and not get angry at our tormentor. Just realizing that by harming us, they are creating so much suffering for themselves in the future, Shantideva describes it as the long-drawn agonies of hell, that instead of feeling anger and frustration, we can develop some compassion for them and maintain the peace of our own minds. The more we can train in this way of thinking, the more easy it will be to counter another's anger with patience and compassion. And that's a very good way to purify the many negative imprints of anger we've previously placed on our mind. So not only does the enemy allow us to practice patience, he or she also purifies our negative karma. Yet even knowing these immense benefits, the mind still wants to seek revenge and cause more suffering in the future for itself. How perverse is that? But then you might ask, well, if I'm the tormentor of the other person and giving them the opportunity to create negative karma, won't I also be born in a state of suffering since I'm causing their downfall? And also, if the person is giving me the opportunity to practice patience and tolerance, won't that produce positive karma for them? Shantideva investigates the two questions in the next two verses. If my mind has the noble quality of patience, I shall not go to hell. But although I'm protecting myself in this way, how will it be so for them? Nevertheless, should I return the harm, it will not protect them either. By doing so, my conduct will deteriorate, and hence this fortitude will be destroyed. Shantideva says that the karma is accumulated by the mind that produces it. So if I develop patience and tolerance, I produce positive karma, or at least avoid accumulating negative karma, so I'll not have to suffer the pains of the lower realms. But if I pay harm for harm, it certainly will not help the other person, and it will spoil all the positive actions I've built up until then. Whatever fortitude I've built up through patience and tolerance will be tainted and harmed. At some point, we know we can work with our mind, writes Pema Chodron. We've listened to the Dharma and pondered it. If someone is continually angry with us, a family member for instance, it occurs to us that we have tools to work with this intelligently and kindly. But what about our parents or siblings? Although we may have a long way to go, they may not have a clue that they are causing themselves unnecessary pain. What's in store for them if they keep strengthening the habit of anger? Remembering this can make us more compassionate towards them and motivate us to practice patience. And in his commentary, His Holiness says that when we return harm for harm, it creates a vicious circle. If someone harms us and we retaliate with revenge, our opponent will then return the vengeful harm, and so it goes on. Such a feud can spread to a community level and go on, and the whole purpose of life is spoiled. We have just such a situation between the Palestinians and the Israelis. Every time one side attacks the other, the harm is returned, which merely incenses more revenge, and so the whole ugly mess never comes to an end. The more entrenched each side becomes, the more hatred for the other is generated, and the more harm is created. We can look at the Sunni and Shiite factions in Iraq also. Will they ever stop throwing human bombs at each other and learn to live peacefully together? Not until they change the anger and hatred and develop patience, love, and compassion. Does this mean, though, that when someone does something to harm us, we should just meekly accept it? His Holiness says maybe the best course is to run away quickly. Which reminds me of some years back when a high lama by the name of Lama Chimi was here and gave a talk in Auckland. Many different kinds of people went to the talk, and in the question time, someone asked Lama what to do if you were encircled by a gang of men who were about to do some very nasty things to you. The person who asked the question looked, if I remember correctly, a little as though this was a situation he was not unfamiliar with. Anyway, Lama Chimi Rinpoche said to him, "Pick one, hit him as hard as you can, and then run as fast as you can." Which, of course, made us all fall about with laughter. But the point was that it's not necessary to just lie down meekly and let people walk all over you. You may have to take some drastic action, but the important thing is what you're doing with your mind. If the motivation is hatred and anger, we are in real trouble. But if we keep a motivation of love and compassion, even in the face of serious harm, we can still act forcefully, but our minds will not be under the sway of negative emotion. So we will not create negative karma, and so we will not experience so much suffering in the future. Which leads to the question of how far our patience and tolerance should go. His Holiness mentions that it's possible to stay so focused on one's practice that we can give away our whole body if necessary. But we should only do that when we are ready. Someone who's practiced extensively and has high realizations can do such a thing if needed without suffering any negative consequences. However, for those mere beginners like myself, it is better to preserve our bodies and deal with the situation in a different way, like hitting hard and running away, but preserving a patient level of mind. Shandy Davis says, since my mind is not physical and in no way can anyone destroy it, but through its being greatly attached to my body, it is caused harm by physical suffering. Since disrespect, harsh speech, and unpleasant words do not cause any harm to my body, why, mind, do you become so angry? Okay, so how do you react when someone criticizes or mocks you? Isn't it the truth that without even thinking, resentment arises? I know that I certainly can't stop it from rearing its ugly head. And yet, as Shantideva points out, it has no real reason to arise in our minds at all. It's just we are so tied up in this way of being, this sense of I, based on the mind clutching so firmly onto this body, that we can't help getting upset when someone says something nasty to us. But it's obvious that harsh words can't harm our body, and because the mind is formless, nor can they harm the mind. So what is there to get angry about? After all, harsh words are just someone else's hot air. And when did a comparatively small amount of hot air hurt anyone? And furthermore, if someone says something nasty about us to someone else, but we don't hear it, do we get upset? No, of course not. What then gives it the capacity to cause us hurt when we do hear it? Perhaps if it was like poison, which harms us, whether we know we have taken it or not, we could have some grounds for feeling upset. But just because some sound enters our ears, it is senseless to find cause for anger. And so Shantideva says, because others will dislike me, but since it will not devour me, either in this or in another life, why do I not want this dislike? Of course, the conventional answer to this question is that if some people scorn me, it will ruin my reputation and other people will dislike me. Therefore, I have to fight back. But the text points out that whatever others think of me will not cause me any great downfall in this life or in any of my future lives. But if I get angry and retaliate, not only will I lose my peace of mind and suffer in this life, but in future lives, the consequences of my anger, I will go through all sorts of suffering as well. In his commentary on this text, His Holiness the Dalai Lama says, we should not think that it is saying we should not take any notice of what other people think. In fact, another part of the text, Shantideva goes on to say that when one moves to a new place, one should take note of the customs and habits of the people and try as best as one can to fit in with them and to make the people happy. As His Holiness says, if we can learn the ways of the people, we can be of better service to them. Shantideva is only recommending that we don't take notice of what others are disrespectfully saying when anger could arise. And now our time is up. Thank you for joining me today. I hope it's been of some benefit. Please dedicate any positive potential to gaining enlightenment to best benefit all other sentient beings. Thank you, and I hope we'll meet again next week. Until then, goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering.